Okay. Let's do this quiz right quick. And the way I'd like to work this is to just go as quick as you can. Just shout out the answers if you remember them. What's the difference between preaching and teaching if you look at the two accounts of the gospel, two gospel accounts of the Great Commission?
Teachers require believers.
Yeah, teachers are teaching believers. That's really the heart of the issue right there. Preaching is to everybody. Some believe, some don't. Then you make a disciple. What's a disciple? The implication for teaching is you expect cooperation. Probably you have a right to expect that. Persons here coming to a Bible study, that kind of implies they intend to learn something and they would be cooperating. What's our goal? What's a goal by our definition? Not the world's definition, but for this class only.
Is that unmeasurable?
Unmeasurable, good. Keep going.
Way of changing somebody's life.
Students, right. I always think what you believe or do. So it's what you think or act. You know, you sometimes increase your faith. Not sure how that will apply, but I'm more firmly convicted. Or I make a change in my life in some way. I can't always observe. Objective, our definition.
Measurable goal for single class.
Well done. Yeah, measurable behavior change in the
month-class period.
In the student, right. What did you say?
Say month-class period.
I can understand.
In one class.
What are the steps in the flow of learning? And I don't care if you get the words right or not, but it starts with
learning facts.
Yes.
Taking relationships.
Relationships.
Understanding principles.
Principles, kind of, yes.
That applications.
Potential applications. Then
changes.
Yeah, personal potential applications for me. And then
developing what I've
finally actually doing those. Yeah, good, thank you. And really, the reason I put that in is I think our lessons might ought to take that approach. And that is when you study a text of Timothy, you got to know what it says. If you just come in and start telling people how they should live, that's not really necessarily Bible teaching. It might be, right? But you want to show them from the text so they can go back and find it. And then you begin to show the patterns that are in the text and the principles and how does this apply to the people in the first century, you know, that kind of thing. And then you finally get to, what can we do differently? How do you face this temptation in your life, right? That kind of thing. And so a lot of our lesson material will kind of have that flow. Start with a fact, maybe an outline to put the facts together in a sequence. I like to think of relationships between facts are like, here's the good and here's the bad, right? Here's the right way, here's the wrong way, right? Here's what came before and here's the result, you know, cause and effect. There's all kinds of relations and that begins to be the basis for saying, oh yeah, if I made that change, this would happen. All right, four Bible qualifications of teachers. I've never taught you guys this. Let's hear some of the ones you
gentleness.
Okay, that's good. Yeah, from 2 Timothy 2. Knowledge, that's almost like the foundation. The presumption is that you know more than the students. Otherwise, what are we doing? Right? We should swap seats or something.
Genuine faith.
Pardon? Genuine faith. And that's demonstrated, I think, in a consistent life. Right? What you live, and what you say, and what you say others, and what else. These are good. One more.
Sounds like, all right. I mean, this may sum up some of the points already, that, you know, teachers should be, you know, have good character, good example, I guess.
Yeah, Timothy was told that, right, in those texts that you read. Be an example in word, and faith, and love, and, you know. So, example. Maybe you can have genuine faith, but nobody knows it. I guess there's some. Okay, good enough. Three verses that indicate a teacher is a position of authority. This is the one I threw at you and demonstrated that throwing stuff at people doesn't teach them anything. Okay. Maybe you went back and looked at it. Let's just... Sandy did remember a few, though. What's one of the texts?
James 3.
Do not be many of you teachers. That suggests that there's a criteria or a bar that's set that you should be careful. Me? And what else?
Verses Timothy 1:7.
Okay, that's desiring to be teachers. That suggests that they aren't, or they are and shouldn't be, or something. Yeah. What else? Acts 13, there's a list of teachers in the church in Antioch, a whole list of those. In fact, it appears that Saul of Tarsus might have been recruited by Barnabas to join that cadre of expert Bible scholars, teachers. another one. Ephesians 4, I think, is an important one. God gave gifts to the church, right? Evangelists, pastors, and teachers are listed as the last three. Apostles and prophets. So those are some you can think of. And I just do that almost. These two are a joke because I never taught you this and you taught yourself. This one I taught you and you didn't remember it. But that's just an illustration. Okay, here's the main bit. Oh, sorry. You know what? I'm going to leave these. I'm leaving this to Russ for Wednesday and Sunday to work through all the background information, all the outline, all the themes, all the course goals for your teaching. So if you're okay with that, in other words,
it didn't sound like much of a lot of
workload. Right, sorry, right. You've got two whole class periods. The idea is that we need to create a unity of somehow between all these lessons. That's the disadvantage of having a different teacher every week. The advantage is you have to finish. Like I don't have to. But the disadvantage is that it's going to be scattered. Right? Each guy has his different. So that as much as we can, we want to establish a common picture of the books. And they fit together quite well. And there are two or three very coherent themes that come back over through their images. For example, the image of a soldier shows up over and over throughout these books and others as well. You can kind of tell by reverse thinking about it, what was Timothy's problem? What was he doing? What were his challenges? What was Paul concerned about? If you kind of figure that out, then you turn around and go the other way and say, well, what's he telling him to do about it? Right? And those are themes that are in there. So I hope you're doing that exercise where you put your best description of the chapter. Okay? So what we're going to try to do in the next two class periods, we'll call this period four, is try to get ourselves coherently thinking about the text. Right? That was step one in the preparation to teach. Learn the text. Right? So first you read it, then you start looking for patterns, then you start organizing, then you start looking for themes. And those themes, by the way, often are very directly related to the goals of the course. So if we decide, for example, that Timothy was a young, scared kind of a guy, but he was in a hugely challenging situation, right? And that's a theme that keeps appearing throughout. Don't be afraid. Don't be ashamed. Don't neglect the gift that's in you. Stand up to these false teachers, and all that. If that's a theme, if it is, I'm not saying you might decide it's not, but if it's a theme, what's a goal that might come from that for us? You see how they relate? Do you face challenges? Do you feel young and inexperienced on occasion? Do you feel like you've got you're opposed by evil men on every side and you'll never survive? You know what I mean? If you feel that way, are there things in the book that could become goals for us? Be more confident, be more, whatever, something like that. You see how the themes and goals are going to be. I went way farther with that than I wanted to. But anyway, so here are the answers. Lystra, Lois, Eunice, Jewish, Christian, mother, nun or pagan. He was in Ephesus, his evangelist in the second and third journeys. He was probably in his 30s, at the time of 1 Timothy, and Paul's circumstances in prison, facing death. And then their themes, there's some themes you can work on those. All right, this is the most important thing we need to do. You got to finish. We got to tell what lessons we're going to teach. So if you're not on here and have not picked a lesson, you need to do it right now. So these are the ones I've gotten, either by email, formally or informally. So let's see, Matthew, I'm going to start in front. I don't see you on here. Do you have a favorite? Have you been? And if somebody can jump in front of Matthew, you can. I just picked on him first, but boy, you better grab it quick. And by the way, I'll say one other thing. It's not too late to back out.
No, I don't.
I'm not
have
encouraging
one.
You. I'm not sure you do that.
I don't have one.
Yeah.
But I have a question. Could you pick one and then I do it?
Yeah, I'll be happy to do that.
Because I want the talent.
Okay. I love it. I will say this. I have 13 guys, and I only need 12 teachers. So if two of you want to work together on a lesson, I'm happy with that. You want to do that? Or if you want to back out and just observe, we'll say you audit the class or something like that. You won't get a diploma, but it'll be on your record that you audited the course. That's the way audits work. I mean. Anyway, okay. So... Let's see, I don't know. All right, so Matthew is going to take The
Well, why don't you wait and see what's left there?
That's what I was going to do. All right, who else has not picked one? Sure, you got any names on here? Oleg, did you pick one? No, you didn't pick one.
I can pick number 8.
Okay. Unashamed service. That's the introduction. That'll also serve as the introduction to 2 Timothy as a book, okay? So think about that as a... All right?
Like, where are we? 9.
Okay. Uh-oh, I think he just jumped ahead of Keith. He was about to pick 9, weren't you?
Uh-huh. You can take that.
I'll take 2.
Okay, somebody, I think it was Dave, somebody didn't want to take 2 because I'll be the first one out or something. All right. And where are we?
Can I do 12?
Sure. Really, you know, Jake's probably going to be the one who's left out in the cold. And he hadn't been here because of his foot and all those other things. Anyway.
Corey's not here today as well.
That's right. So has everybody got one?
So it's Matthew 4.
2 T's?
Yes.
Okay. Now, here's the rest of the story on that. Look at this. So I didn't fill it in, but that means that on the 8th of May, whoever has lesson 2 is going to have their dry run material ready. And that's a draft of a handout and a class period plan and some activities and things like that. You okay with that? And I will fill all these in. I don't know what I'm going to do about the extra teachers. Maybe I have 2 extra teachers. I don't know. I must. So these are dates you have to meet too. Now, these can be rearranged. I don't think we can teach the adult class and have them out of order. That's probably not a good plan. But we can dry run these out of order. So if you can't make this day, won't be the best, but we can fix it. Okay? Is that, everybody okay with that? And Russ, you and I are on a weekend thing somewhere, aren't we?
Yes.
Is that in June?
It is June the 25th.
Okay. All right. We'll figure
it out. So Debbie will be on his own. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Thank you for that. And I will. What I like to do is, I'm trying to figure out, I always use Dropbox, but I've just lately just been kind of annoyed with it. It doesn't seem that easy to pull stuff up. I'll do something and email you out a shared site, and I'll put all the lesson material and all these charts and the material that Russ is going to cover, the background information, things like that on Timothy. All right, now there's one other piece of information. Oleg, thank you for the email. Oleg was looking into these commentaries that I recommended, and honestly, I just picked them because they're like easy commentaries. They're not heavy on Greek. Like Linsky, he's a German guy, right? So he likes to quote Martin Luther all the time in German, you know. And then he quotes, Ignatius in Latin. And then he writes the Greek word. And then he writes it came from this Hebrew term, you know. And it's all in Hebrew, or, you know what I mean. So that, you can go for that if you want to. But the ones I picked were 2 things. They're easy and old. And I picked old, and you may have read the email, because they're all online for free. They're out of copyright, right? And the fact that they're old means they're somewhat more conservative. Y'all understand that. In modern times, people have lost their... seem like we're farther from the events, but somehow we know more about them. I've never quite figured that out. But they are lost their faith in inspiration. So the answers for fulfilled prophecies are, well, it must have been written before the event. Or, you know what I mean? They're kind of good. And also... affected by modern issues, right? Where the text history obviously says this, but that can't be so because we've learned so much better by now. Anyway, that's a danger with more modern commentaries. However, the ones I listed, I think a couple of them are would-be Calvinist. Okay? So, in general, that's not too much of an issue, except when you get to anything about baptism, which there's not really much in 1 2 Timothy. Y'all understand that, but you'll kind of get the sense of total depravity or the direct operation of the Spirit to help us understand and believe and all that. So you got to watch for that. Don't start with the commentaries, though, right? So that's one thing I didn't say in the email, but I almost did. And they're expensive if you go buy hard copies because they're huge, you know. Some of them are all old things. Anyway, they should be available online for free, except that revised one that I mentioned that you had in your first one in there. Erdman's, I think it is. It's a whole Bible commentary. What's good about it is it's all in one book. It's fairly conservative. It's probably, 80s or something? how old it is. I think it was. Anyway. And there's some resources, too, in the room over there on the other side of the kids' class over here. There's some. There's a small remnants of what used to be a fairly large library over there. So I think the pulpit commentaries are over there and some others. But, again, don't start with that. Okay. We didn't really define themes, but I hope you understand what they are. I've tried to take a cut at it. I think when you read a section of text, a book in particular, you begin to see some things that recur throughout the book. And they may be based on the purpose of the book, the nature of the author, the circumstances of the writing, the problems of the people written to, whatever. But they give you kind of a picture, a statement that helps kind of put everything in the writing in a certain context. Maybe more than one of those. But I think there are unifying principles, which could be just a fact that is to the Corinthians, y'all are babies. You're just babies. You're acting immature, right? That's kind of the theme throughout all 1 Corinthians. Or you're puffed up is another one, right? That's a problem. It's a fact. An imperative is grow up, right? Straighten up. Love each other. Be unified. Those are things that, so it could be that, that are pervasive in the material he covers. I think it emerges after you keep reading this and studying the text. I believe it helps you select what material you want to cover in the book. If you've got a section of text, some of y'all are going to have 20, 25 verses in a chapter, right? You're probably going to have to leave some stuff out to get that done in 45 minutes. I'm just telling you that. It's okay. How do you pick what you cover and what you don't? It's all the Bible. How can we leave out the Bible, right? How do you decide?
Chosen the theme.
A theme might be part of it. It could be that. What else? Remember what
went through the spiritual needs.
There you go. Exactly right. Yeah. Remember, this is a two-way. It's just working a problem from the beginning and the back in the end. I think in the old artificial intelligence, it was forward chaining and backward chaining. Reasoning was the way you think about it. What do the students need? What are their weaknesses? What are their problems? What are they struggling with? And you don't know who the students will be, but you kind of can look at yourself maybe for these adult classes. On the other hand, what's the text saying, right? And maybe the text doesn't address one of these particular needs of the students. Okay, all right, but I'm covering this text. It does address these two, so I pick that and work backward and say, well, these three verses right here, they're key. They're like, that's like addressing an issue dead on what we want to talk about. You know what I mean? Now, these other details might be good for somebody younger or somebody who's not a Christian or whatever, but I might not cover those, right? Because I'm matching what the needs of the class as I perceive them to the material. Anyway, it has a high correspondence with course goals, as I mentioned before. And the theme of this book is, you're a soldier. You've been given a commission, right? Don't slack off. If that's a theme you see throughout the whole book, does that apply to us in some way? Well, then I make a goal out of it. See that? See how that works. And then able to repeat the themes is a good objective. I think Russ is better at this than I am maybe, but you know, every class period, put the goal, put the themes up there. So people would say, oh yeah, that's what we're doing. As a beginning point, or maybe it's a quiz question or something like that. Okay, enough of that. All right, here's the structure we talk about. It's a quick, I have not really talked about that so much except to say, this is the approach we take. So if you're studying a text, here's an idea of how you might approach the class period. This is not a schedule, necessarily, but it's a logical sequence, right? The first thing I think you ought to do is have some kind of attention gift, right? And what did y'all think of this quiz being in your seat when you came in? How did it make you feel?
Excited.
Yes. Really?
Yeah.
I was the opposite. I was not excited when I saw it.
Yeah. And I loved to hear the, Marty's class going to have a quiz. Right? Because I sense there is a kind of a, you know, I don't know how to say this. This is really okay. But it's fun to complain about. Right? Now tell me how excited in what way.
Well, because I spent time reading the...
So he got a reward, right, in some way, for some behavior that we would like to encourage, right?
Helps build reoccurring knowledge, so if you see quizzes,
yeah,
and it's something you studied in, doing the lesson, or
it's something you don't know, mm-hmm. but when you go over it, you can write it down, and then you have that,
yeah.
and so you can remember it.
Yeah. This is, my model of the brain is that it stores data, a lot of data, that we can never find. And what we do when we learn something, or remember, is probably the better way to do it, we remember, we're not putting the fact in there any more firmly, we're actually retreading the path to that fact. You understand what I'm saying? So if I force myself to remember your name and call it out, it was in there already. What I've done is I've kind of broadened that little highway that got me to that data. Y'all understand what I'm saying? I think that's... So if I have to call it out and, you know, recite it or write it or in some way use it or something, then that's... It's not putting the data in there, really. It's just widening the path to let me get it quicker. I'm putting a 12-gauge wire instead of a 16, you know, to that path, right? Stan, what were you going to say?
Yeah, I was just going to say it just wakes up the student right. to be prepared.
Do you feel the adrenaline? Like, and you probably know I'm not going to, like, beat you up if you miss some of the questions, right? And still, there is a kind of a challenge that I wanted to get them all right, you know. You see what I mean? And it actually resets your head. Oh, yes, that's right. We're studying this. It is Sunday morning, but we did talk about this Wednesday night. So there's a kind of a bringing you into the present, that kind of thing. Okay, so something like that, some kind of a thing. We tend to do the easy thing, like try to ask open questions like, okay, what do you think? You know, what is the goal? Which I did as our way of doing the quiz. How many people am I waking up then? If somebody answers it.
Just one.
Maybe there's somebody who thinks he might call on me, but once that danger has passed, you know?
And you realize that they're wanting somebody else to actually speak up, and I'm going to call
that's right.
somebody, and
that's
you're
right.
going to go, okay.
That's right.
I'll sit back down.
Yeah, that's right. Keith, what do you think of that? Right. So you get the idea there. So, yeah, I mean, you have to be careful about that in class, but if you got a class that can handle that, you know, whack them every once in a while. Say, you know, so you know, then everybody else says, oh, he's going to call on me by name. Oh, and he's going to call me by name if I don't answer a question every once in a while, Kevin. You know what I mean? So, you know what I mean? So I better get on the stick. You know what I mean? Okay. All right.
I like the pre-class attention getter. I think that's an advantage of PowerPoint these days, is that you can put up something. If you have a thought question you want to cover later on in the class, you get something up there. It could be your quiz, but for those who come in and aren't going to really visit with their neighbors anyway, it's something for them to do or to be thinking about ahead of time. Just why not use the 10 minutes before class if people are actually showing up and are sitting there?
Yeah, you know, I'm a middle school teacher, and we do something that is called Do Now.
Yeah.
So, because there is that...
You just control the class a little bit at the beginning, yeah.
Yeah, they walk in and they start talking about something else.
Yeah.
So, like, as soon as you get in here, just put your mind into it.
Right. I walked around, I think it was the same Wednesday night, I'm not sure, and just started taking pictures in the classrooms here. And you may notice that. Here's Russ, as a matter of fact. Pre-class exercise. See that? And I, you know, here's another class, thought questions, Genesis, right? So the other thing is, too, what precedent am I setting for coming in on time or even early?
They want to get extra knowledge.
They may want to. I hope they do.
Yeah.
You have an idealistic view of the students.
Yeah.
And key to that, right?
Yeah.
Because they might live up to it. You never know. But the point is, after a while, you say, you know what, he always has something going on. And truthfully, as a teacher, I like to get 5 more minutes in front of the class period, right? I was hoping y'all would be here a little earlier, we mentioned it Wednesday night, and get this quiz done before the bell rang, right? So I'm stealing some time. Good thing. That's a good stealing, but you know what to say. Okay, so that... At some point, objectives and review. Now, my problem with this part is it can become dry, right? I'm starting to drone, and I got everybody kind of pumped up. Who said excitement? Yeah, I got the adrenaline flowing, right, a little bit, and with the quiz and whatever. But then I let it subside, droning on about the objectives, which I saw last time and the time before and the time before. So maybe combine the objectives and review into the quiz itself. That's a way to do it. Do something like that. But the more involvement you get, by the way, there's a kind of an inverse relationship, which is the more involvement you get, which is great for attention, great for retention, as you mentioned, but it takes time. That's the trade. Yeah. The more you talk, the more you groupize, the more you fill out things, the more time you're going to take. So you got to figure that out. And we've limited ourselves like 45 minutes, and boy, I just... I grew up teaching in college where it was 52 minutes and you had 8 minutes to change classes. You know what I mean? So somehow my brain is set in this hour-long rhythm because I always went over. But you know. Then I think you kind of say, here's where we're going. This is somewhat of a roadmap. And in our lessons, we'll look at the outline structure of the text. There may be some background things like difficult words, or here's a geography we're going to be looking at today, or something like that. Then you start looking at the content. And then I think maybe this approach, which is like facts, relationships between facts, and then potential applications and life-changing conclusions, that's our sequence of learning. You see that? Problem is this. When you run out of time, what do you always end up not covering? The thing you were trying to get to, right? So why don't we do all that, and then class was over. So if you're only teacher, then you say, well, we'll cover the applications next class period. Okay. But you were all set. You had everything in place. You know what I mean? So here's a possible way to do that. Cover some content, like the first section of the outline, right? And then go to the applications. And then do this. So maybe this is a loop right here, right? And I was actually at a class Wednesday night, 2 weeks ago, in Huntsville. It was when y'all had the Men We Support thing. Mm-hmm. And the teacher got up and he said, I'm going to do this different. I think it might have been Michaela's dad. Was Tim Smith the teacher? Can't remember. Anyway, he said, I'm going to tell you the applications, the first thing. And he said, and by the way, the preacher there who usually teaches the class, he was gone. He was substituting for Alan Dvorak. And he said, I'm going to show you a chart that Alan never gets to. So he showed the application charts, right? He said, you've never seen these charts, but they're in all the lessons. And he just, now, it kind of was pretty good, because then I could begin to see, well, where's he going with this, you know, when he went back into the text, you know, item by item. But when he first put them up there, I'm thinking, what are you basing this on? You know, what's the proof of this? You know, what is this? So it was kind of okay. I mean, and in the end, I kept looking for those applications in the material that he went back and began to cover.
Ben, this is especially important in this class, because you don't get the luxury that we do if we're like teaching multiple classes. I didn't get to it at the end. I can start the next class off with that. You can't do that to each other. You really have to make sure that class is a truly self-contained class.
And I think it's more effective anyway. I love it when it's like one out of 10 times, actually get the complete thing done. And I started here and I ended here before we left and said, let's all, by Tuesday, let's put a plan in place to read the Bible more regularly, or some application. You know what I mean? I've gotten that by the end of the class period, so that'll be your challenge. So here's a planning worksheet. You find this in your material. I'm trying to get through all the mechanics of the dry run and the planning, just so you know what you need to do. You can start on this now, after this class period. So what you will do is, when we do our dry run, you will bring this filled out, right? Bring this sheet filled out and hand it out to everybody in the class. So this is what I'm going to do for my 45 minutes on June the 5th, or whatever date that you have, right? So put your name on it. Put your section of text here. List your specific objectives for the class period. List some activities used to accomplish the objective. This is not the schedule. It's just like, I'm going to do a quiz. I'm going to do a group discussion about what was Timothy's personality. I'm going to do this or that. You know, I'm going to have a case study. Let everybody look at something. Whatever. And we'll talk about some candidate activities. Remember, higher involvement, higher time. So it's kind of harder. And better learning. But okay. And then take these activities then and put yourself a time budget. And you can start at -5, by the way. Or -10. Right? You want to start with a quiz, put -5, 5 minutes up till class time to start. I'm going to let everybody who gets here early have a quiz. And then two minutes to go over it, right? So anyway, you see the idea here. So this is from another teacher training class. This is from the Hebrews version of it, but you get the idea. Here are some objectives. I hope these, you know, at the end of the class period, the student will be able to explain how the characters in chapter 11 and witnesses to those who live by faith or something like that. Are witnesses to those who explain how they're witnesses. So that's an explanation. And then here are the activities, which include have small groups, look up and report on, blah, blah, blah. Okay, so here's my time budget. It adds up to 45 minutes. Does this look aggressive to you? Yeah, it is. No way I'll do this. But anyway.
Anything that says 2 to 3 minutes is aggressive.
It takes 2 to 3 minutes to describe what you're about to do. Yeah, exactly. So there's some stars here. And stars mean if I get down to here and I'm way behind schedule, what are you going to leave out? And don't make it the bottom line application, right? But make it some optional activity. If we have the time, do it. And Daniel Grantham was telling me that that's the one thing he's actually, maybe the only thing, but that he's done differently after having been in this workshop, is he makes a minute-by-minute schedule. If you've ever been in his class, he doesn't talk about it, but he looks down every once in a while, and you'll see he just moves on. He just moves on. But you also have some slot, you know what I mean? Something you can leave out, and it, you know, near the end. Don't put it at the beginning because you don't know whether to leave it out or not, right? It's got to be somewhere near the end. Okay? Let's talk about time management in just a minute. Is it possible that you could share this plan with the class? I know Daniel doesn't, I don't think. Could you share this with the class?
Could.
But you better not. Yeah. What do you think?
I don't know. It kind of gives everyone the guidance of where the class needs to go.
Right. Especially if you're teaching adults. And actually, if you're teaching middle school and high school, let them hold you to this schedule. You know what I mean? You're my alarm clock, right? This middle school, right? You know, at a 35 minutes, 7, you know, whatever it is, 9:35, wherever we're doing, you stop me, and we're going to go to this thing. Right?
They let you know.
Yeah. And they love that. Right? They get to control the teacher. I get to call the teacher out. But anyway, yes, if adults are disciples and they trust you to have a purpose and a plan and a, you know, let them participate. Let them help you with that. And so really, that becomes, it makes it easier, it seems to me, to say, I know you had something to say, but we don't have time. I already told you that, or something. You know?
Yeah.
Right? That's probably what you want to say.
I was going to say, like, this is almost kind of like the entire class schedule. This is just for one day. You're giving everybody a schedule of what we're doing.
Sure. Oh, good point. It's a microcosm of the bigger plan. I decided to cover chapter 2 in one lesson, right? But I'm going to divide. I forget which chapter we divided up into two. You might remember. There's one of them that's divided into two lessons. Anyway, maybe
2 Timothy 2.
It could also help pinpoint what's the more important things you spend more time on.
And you're tipping the class off early on.
That's good.
So they don't get sidetracked.
That's good.
The other thing you can, as far as your time, read the mood of the class. There is a mood. Sometimes they're stressing out over, okay, we're supposed to get through verse 20, and we're 25 minutes in, and we're only through verse 5. But that was my plan. I'm okay with it. They're stressing out, you know. So just kind of read the mood. Keep them. I want them to relax. I want them not to worry about my time. That's my issue, not theirs. So until they begin to impede my schedule,
right?
Then it is their issue and mine, and I got to fix it. So.
All right. So I got to move on. I did want to list some learning activities. Again, this is all in your handout. I don't intend that we could talk for a long time about some of the mechanics of doing these, but here are some things you can do. You can assign the reading before, fill out a lesson before, read the text in class. I will stop and make a comment on that. When somebody starts reading, especially as most of us are, we're not the best readers, and especially if we're called on in class to read text we haven't read before, is that always the best learning? I think we have some kind of mystical view if we're reading the Bible. spiritual things are happening. You ever sense that? Read the Bible. I think we should honor the text. That is not what. That's not my point. But the point is, just reading is not really necessarily learning. In fact, it often is some of the most boring pieces of the class. I'm sorry to say that. Bible is not magic. In other words, it doesn't. You understand what I'm saying? So when you read, you need a good reader. If you're going to read at all, what's the purpose in the reading? Well, it seems to me that you need to help create a purpose. That is, find the three mentions of something, or find the four images that are described in this text. Or let's look at this text and see some evidence that Paul was concerned about Timothy. What do you find in here? You see what I mean? So now people are looking and listening for something. But I'm not too much in favor of reading the text front and back, especially without a kind of a purpose in the moment. I just think you lose people's attention. But you can disagree with me on that. You don't have to agree with it. That's just an idea. So reading the text aloud in class. And what I've said is, up here, what are the things to think about? How much time is required? How much control do you have about what topics they get on? Like, you have a group activity and, you know, you haven't given them a really clear assignment. There's no telling what they'll talk about, right? And so you've kind of lost the direction there. What's the involvement at the lowest level? That is, every single brain is actually thinking. Is it good for learning facts? Is it good for combining facts and analysis? Is it good for discovering applications? Is it good for building convictions? And the farther you go this way, you understand the time is going to go way up. If you have ever changed your life for something, you know it didn't often occur because of an offhanded comment somebody made. It came because somebody made a real good point and you thought about it a long time. Or you had a long discussion late into the night with somebody. You understand what I mean? That's what it takes sometimes to change conviction. Or you almost got killed in a car wreck or something major in your life is what I'm saying. So it's very hard to get to this side over here. Maybe we can talk about applications, but you're just not going to get there in the class period. But anyway, individual reports, flashcards, a planned exam, a pop quiz, group reports, case studies, role playing, students do the teaching. Some of that can be done in high school and maybe a college-age class. In-class debate, open discussion, watching the video, etc. See, these are all, and there are lots more, right? But each one has its good and bad. For learning, for the kind of learning it is, and the flow of learning, for the time it takes, for the level of involvement, and the complication, and all that. Y'all see what I'm getting at there. So these are some candidate activities. I want to talk about handouts. Why do we hand out things? And really, it's kind of the embryo's way to prepare lesson material. I think my dad deserves some credit for that. Long ago, in the 70s, when we were just, he would always say, all the teachers need to develop their material. That's why the kids' classes don't use standard packets, you know, just. But we always have to have a handout. Why? What do we do with it? What's the handout for?
Guidance.
Guidance for what? For what?
Guidance to help people pull certain things out of the text that may be important.
All right. When would they do that?
When they're not in class.
Okay. So one idea is that you're trying to pre-learn a bunch of stuff, right? You mean you want them to learn it before they get to class?
Mm-hmm.
That means you don't have to cover it in class.
So what do you do to make sure that they study?
Okay. You'll see your point.
You're exactly right.
So, but often we kind of do the handout and then we cover all the same thing. That's all we do in class is go through the handout. So, as Matthew says, well, yeah, I need to make sure that, you know, there's that weird question in there that I'm sure nobody understood when they were home. Right? How much time do you spend preparing the lesson materials to get handed out in the classes? I don't know what class you were in last period. I was in the Hosea and Amos. Right? And they had one sheet. You had to get, you know, Dave would email it. It was online. How much time did you spend on that? I'm sorry. Don't answer out loud. Right? But how? Let's ask a better question. How much time does the average member spend on those lessons? Any?
Not very much.
Not much. Right.
If you have the ADL class or the ADL student that's spending good time, I guess the process of framing the lesson is taking place because you have the facts, you're doing the contrast, you're doing all of this, and then when you come to class, you're understanding now
And I can go the rest of the way in the flow of learning.
Yep.
You'll see what he's getting at there? Now, he said ideal. I think that's the word he kept using, right?
Yeah.
That is the ideal. Right, so if I look at these activities, that was the first fella.
Yeah, right.
You know, here's a Bible reading before, filling out a lesson before. Yeah, you can probably get the facts. It may be okay for analysis, but you're probably going to have trouble getting all the way to changing people just by filling out a lesson sheet. Y'all see that? On the other hand, if they're not going to do it, you've got to plan the class period, kind of to your point. If you didn't do it or you didn't understand it, either way, we got to figure that out and make sure that factual basis gets there. So somehow, having a lesson sheet, one purpose is for pre-class preparation. And in the ideal, I like the way you said that, they come and they got all the facts, and you don't even spend any class time on that. You go right to the bottom and start talking about analysis, if there's some of that to cover, and then some idea of application. That would be the ideal. But we can't get people to do that very well. There are some techniques to get people to do their lessons. In the high school, junior high class, I go look at their sheets, and you know what I mean? Or have them turn something in, or have a scoreboard for the smaller kids to say, did their lesson, came to class, brought their Bible, and even brought a writing instrument, you know. So they get credit for things that I want to set as expectations. Hard to do that in adult classes.
They expect a quiz when they come in, they're more likely
to do it. So that, exactly. So anything like that that encourages the expectations, be on time. Bring your lesson sheet back after I hand it out. By the way, you'll find out that when you print lessons, you need to print at least 50% more than there are people in the class because they disappear.
Can I get one more outside of class way to get them beyond the for several classes where it fits, and this one might, I do a reading challenge. But the reading challenge is, I don't want to necessarily make it, I want to know how many times you've read the text to read, or it's the whole class. And I get them to tell me beforehand, we debate over how many times this class can read this book over the 13 lessons that we're going to do, the 6.5 weeks. And so they'll tell me, we think we, as a group, we can read it 80 times. And I start every class by asking, okay, who all has read this
book? So do you sense a better awareness of the text in the class?
It makes them read it way more times.
Yeah, I'm sure of that.
Build on that. Right. And yeah. It's an accomplishment. And I keep it on the whiteboard so that they know, all right, we're only
as
four
a group,
classes in.
Yeah.
As a group, we've read it 20 times. We said we'd read it 80.
Right.
But it's just one other idea, how to make sure they're doing something out of class but reading through the whole text.
So that's the pre-class. In class, I handed this out not for you to prepare before class, but so you would kind of know what I'm talking about. And there's a template. Oh, I need that. I'm going to take a picture of it. You know what I mean? So you don't have to. It's there. You have it. So it's actually a guide. Sometimes I have a group activity. The assignment is there in blanks. Fill in 3 reasons out of the text. And now, you didn't need to do that before class. That's an in-class activity. It's like a worksheet you might do in math or something, you know, where it expedites the learning and controls the activity. Does that make sense? Now, do you want to hand that out before they come? Well, the problem with that is they might expect it. They'll try to figure that out before they come. Right? I don't understand. So, and then the other thing is, it's a take-home record of what we talked about. A lot of people say, can I have your PowerPoint charts? Well, somehow maybe it'd been better to have that available. So here's a lesson sheet you might think about. And I'll just go ahead and, in fact, you don't have to think, this is what we're going to do. This is the format of the lesson sheets that we want to prepare. And I'll give you a template in Word and stuff like that. Okay? So here's, I'll just show you the kind of the good things about it here. The objectives is contract with the student. Here's what we're going to do. Here's a reading guide. And by the way, you see the text is already divided into an outline. A good exercise is make them fill the outline in, but oftentimes that's a little bit too hard. But and I compromise sometimes and I'll say, here are the verse segments, here are the outline topics, you match them. So that's kind of an intermediate way. You don't have to think of it yourself, but you have to match it. So you have to read it to do that. That's a way to get them to do that without too much difficulty before class. And then here's some factual questions on the text right there. I hope they would prepare that beforehand. I might set an expectation. Please do this. There'll be a quiz on that and so on. Here's the Bible text that makes it even easier. I think that makes it more compatible with the study habits. If I can just get this sheet out on my table, I've got the text and the questions, and all I have to do is draw a line and circle over here. So it makes it very easy to prepare, maybe make it as easy as possible. The questions here are organized like the outline, A, 1, 2, 3, B, 1, 2, 3, see that? And then I start to get into thought or analysis questions. And so often I will do in class only or something, right? Or you can say, do you think, do you understand when I say do you think, I'm kind of giving you permission to say anything you want to, right? You don't have to, there's not one right answer. So there's a, and then I say here, this is only for in class discussion. Or don't even put this in there and have this handed out in class, if that's the idea. Y'all see that? That's kind of a template for a lesson. And let me just, I think that's it. Let me just show, no, I'm done. We're all done. So what you need to do is, you had that handout, which I gave you last time, which had the, here are the sections of 1 Timothy and 2 Timothy. What, did you try that?
Yeah.
Oh, the worksheet?
Yeah. So, I think the easy, not the easy, but the most obvious thing to do Wednesday is, Rush, you might want to get in groups of 2 or 3 and force them to come to some kind of consensus and see if, as a group, you can detect repeated phrases and themes that are recurring throughout the book by hearing everybody's assessment of what these sections are about. Okay? And what I'm trying to do in this exercise is kind of simulate what you would be doing at home at night for the weeks before you teach your the material. What would you be doing, right? And we're trying to accelerate that, you know, and so we all have the same kind of view. Accelerate and unify. So we all...